you for joining us on UCSD Guestbook. We're here at the Reuben H. Fleet Science Center this evening, and our special guest is Father George Coyne, who is the director of the Vatican Observatory. Father Coyne, thank you for joining us this evening.
Dennis, it's good to be with you. I look forward to our conversation. It's been a nice evening so far.
Well, thank you. I talked to a lot of people, and I mentioned the Vatican Observatory, and people are just blown away. Why is the Vatican interested in astronomy?
That's a question that always recurs, you know, and you know, a lot of people think we're there to baptize extraterrestrials or to, you know, all these kinds of fantastic things. The Vatican Observatory exists, as many institutions do, for a simple reason, that in the 16th century, the calendar had to be reformed. Easter was becoming a winter festival. Ramadan, Passover, all the religious festivals that are celebrated as spring festivals were becoming winter festivals. So the Pope at that time, Pope Gregory XIII, asked the Jesuits at the Collegio Romano, the Roman college in downtown Rome, to study the data required to reform the calendar. So a certain tradition started up of doing research in this way, and the Vatican Observatory came to be. That tradition was so rich that the Church has always considered continuing this kind of work.
And so the research continues to this day. What sort of research is going on today, and what sort of discoveries are being made by Vatican astronomers?
Well, what we're doing today is very much involved with the move that we made in 1980. We could no longer observe at Castel Gandolfo. The sky was getting too bright, as it does for many observatories. So we moved, we opened a research institute in Tucson, Arizona. So our research is very much based upon a new advanced technology telescope that we've built there. And that involves two principal programs. One is looking for dark matter in our own galaxy, and the other is looking at nearby galaxies to compare them to the very distant galaxies that Hubble Space Telescope is observing.
And what are the sorts of interests that you're involved in? What sort of research are you doing?
Well, my research is involved in binary stars. I'm looking at stars where one of the stars is either a neutron star or a black hole and is sucking matter off of its companion star. These are very interesting systems because this kind of exchange of matter changes the life history of both of the stars. So a star that grows up being in a system like this is very different from the star that grows up being a single star. And that's what I'm studying with our telescopes in Arizona.
When people find out that you are a priest as well as a scientist, I'm sure they must say, how is that possible? I get a lot of people asking me that question. I don't know how to answer it. How do you explain how they work together?
Yeah, most people think of it as being a very strange combination because most priests, to Catholics or to others, are men that are involved in dealing with people in parishes and churches. We are involved in doing scientific research, and I think that what it comes down to is the following, that the Catholic Church wants to have a visible presence in the world of science because, you know, science dominates our culture. I mean, you can't open Time magazine or the local newspaper without the latest results from Hubble Space Telescope. Is the universe going to expand forever or not? I mean, our culture is very dominated by science, and especially the science of astrophysics and cosmology. So the Church wants to have, it's a small presence, but it wants to have people who are professionally trained, they're astronomers, just like all other astronomers, involved in this world.
What kind of reactions do you get from people? Are they intrigued? Are they confused? What sort of stories can you tell about that?
My colleagues as professional astronomers, because we're very much involved at the University of Arizona, and as many people know, Tucson, Arizona is a center for observational astronomy because of the desert climate, etc. We're very much involved in research there. Our colleagues look upon us with, we're fellow astronomers. They're a bit confused by, you know, our priesthood because not many are Catholics and not many are religious thinkers at all. The public in general are very confused by this. But The confusion is a good confusion because I think it makes them think of the fact that this, you know, what we've learned in school about the contrast between science and religion, here are men who, you know, are respected in their fields of doing research, and yet they're religious priests. So it adds confusion, which is productive, fruitful confusion. It makes them think, rethink some age-old maybe prejudices that they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, now your credentials in both science and religion are very, very impressive. How would you say that your pursuits of religion and science are similar? How would you explain how you are trying to explore the universe in those two different avenues?
Well, it's very personal, of course, my response, because it you know, relates to me. The way I view it is the following, that I never came to believe in God, to have religious faith, through any rational, strictly rational process, certainly not through science. But having the faith, when I do science, all of my scientific result, my passion for trying to understand the universe, gives me a further reason to believe. It enriches, it gives a greater depth to my religious belief because I can work as a scientist. In other words, the two do not contrast, but not one establishes the other or, you know, condemns the other. Once having the faith, I find that everything that I do in science helps put more flesh on what I believe in, frankly.
So the faith actually helps you in the science as well?
No, I would say not. It neither helps nor hinders. If I were not a believer, if I were not a priest, the science I do would be identically the same. It does nothing. The faith does nothing to, you know, I didn't choose to do a certain kind of science. I don't do science in a different way than anyone else does because I'm a believer. I don't think that the faith contributes in that way anything to the way I do my science.
Well, that's very interesting. So really the faith, the religious faith and the science are two different ways of looking at things. Neither is good, neither is bad, but they're just different.
Yeah, that's correct. And yet there is a dialogue between the two. In my own life there is. I mean, even when I give talks to people and try and express myself as a scientist and as a believer, I always come away having doubts, having sort of wondering whether I'm approaching things in the right way. So there's always kind of a tension, but it's a happy tension. It's a productive tension. It's a creative tension between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, when people think of the Vatican and astronomy, thoughts immediately go to Galileo. That's been four centuries. And the Catholic Church finally said, well, you know, maybe Galileo was right and it was cool. How would you help explain what that situation was originally back in the 1600s? And how did you come about re-examining this whole issue so that the Catholic Church could reevaluate it?
Well, the first is sort of easy to address in the following sense, that, you know, the circumstances of the times of Galileo are very complicated, and yet they really do explain what was happening. The circumstances are the Council of Trent had occurred just a few decades before. The Catholic Church was very weak in a sense. It was fighting battles with the growth of Protestantism. It was very sort of turn in upon itself, defend Scripture in the way that it wanted to defend Scripture. All of those things affected the Church's reaction. Consequently, its reaction to Galileo was colored by all of that. But I would, as a churchman, and frankly, having considered this very long, fault the Church on the fact that Galileo was a renowned international scholar. He had indications, not proofs, of what he was talking about, the sun being the center of the universe. And he tried to keep the Church from pronouncing on this issue. There was no need to do it. And yet he did not succeed, and to me the greatest mistake of the Church was coming out with a condemnation of an international scholar who was investigating an area that was not completely resolved. Why not let the discussion go on? And I think that is the essential issue there.
So did the church officials actually look through his telescope, see his observations, and say, we know what you're saying, but we can't get into this, we can't deal with it? How do they actually react?
Well, the word church officials is difficult to link onto because, you know, when you talk about the church in general, who are you talking about? The Pope, the Cardinals? So it's very difficult to link onto that. But certainly, the Jesuit scientists, who were very respected by the papacy and the church, looked through the telescope and supported Galileo's observations. There's no doubt about it. The figures in the church who counted most from the scientific point of view, the Jesuits who were involved, looked through telescopes with Galileo and confirmed that his observations of the satellites of Jupiter, of the phases of Venus, etc., were all correct.
And so why did the church then say this can't
well,
be?
Well, it's very easy to say the church did not listen to the scientists, but it's easy to say, but I think it's the truth. The church did not listen. In fact, the Galileo controversy was not a controversy between science and religion, in a sense, because science was never at the table in neither the 1616 congregation of the Holy Office, nor in the 1633 condemnation of Galileo. In neither of those cases was there any scientific evidence presented to the assembled cardinals. None. So science was not at the table, essentially.
So when we were growing up learning in school about this, how did it all come to be reexamined three and a half, 4 centuries later?
Oh, yes, the reexamination. That's really, it's always been a thorn, obviously, in the side of the church because it's grown up, as the current pope has described it, as kind of a myth that establishes science as, by its very nature, in contrast with the faith. And the current pope brought it to a head when he first became pope, Pope John Paul II, in his first years of his papacy. He began to talk about we have to re-examine this case, lay it out on the table, examine it thoroughly from a historical point of view, a scientific point of view, and get rid of it. Admit where we were wrong, where anybody else was wrong, and get this off our shoulders as a myth. Well, the attempt to do that, and I do say attempt, because I don't think the story is over with yet. I served on the commission that was set up by John Paul II to do this, and I don't think that commission fully carried out its job. I think the Galileo case still hangs over us.
Well, what can we expect for the future?
Well, I hope that we can continue to re-examine and to admit the faults really where they lay, and I think, you know, the fault, I'll sum it up in the way that I did before, the fault really lies with a church condemning a scientist who had international reputation. He had published the Sidereus Nuncius, that is his observations of the satellites of Jupiter, phases of Venus, mountains on the moon, all of these, which gave indications, at least doubts, about the old system of the world. Why not let him investigate? And I think the wrong that was done has to be recognized, brought forth, recognized, and then we can go into the future.
One of the other questions that I get from a lot of people is the whole question of extraterrestrial life. Because it seems that if we should detect the presence of extraterrestrial life, that says something very, very personal about us, our existence. We have been moved from time immemorial farther and farther and farther from the center. How would a discovery like that, in addition to being one of the greatest ever made, how would that affect us as humans?
Oh, it would affect us very seriously. Even the possibility of extraterrestrial life has already changed our way of thinking about ourselves. And religiously speaking, it would be a great challenge. Because the world's religions, we talk about it, whether it's Christianity, Islam, Judaism, etc., are earth-centered religions. The scripture is written by earthlings. I mean, according to Catholic belief, inspired by God, etc., if we find extraterrestrial intelligent life, then there are a lot of questions that come up about the centrality of the faiths that we have. It's a challenge to them, but I think it's a healthy challenge to them to rethink the sort of earth-centered nature of our religious beliefs.
I mean, it certainly happened when we got a chance to look back at our world from outside, and we saw a reevaluation of our world. It changed the paradigm. We started seeing ourselves as citizens of the earth as opposed to Russians and Americans and blacks and whites and so on. And this, you're right, could have a profound effect. What about the whole idea of extraterrestrial intelligence? I mean, finding an amoeba is considerably different than finding a being out there who presumably has whatever we want to call intelligence, who has the ability to think, to reason, to study the universe.
Yeah. The problem is even more complicated by the fact that statistically speaking, if we find extraterrestrial intelligence, it's very likely that it will be much more intelligent than we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we look at the growth in our intellectual productivity within our lifetime, the growth in communications, I mean, television did not exist when I was born. When I was in high school, it was rare to have television. Well, you know, I mean, the growth just in a 50 to 60 year period is immense. Think of civilizations that have been around much longer than ours. So the challenge to us of extraterrestrial intelligence is an enormous one, but I think it's a very fruitful one. It gives us a much better vision of ourselves within the total universe.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the big question these days with the school boards in Kansas and Kentucky and various places is the whole question of evolution. How does the biblical account of us being here mesh or contrast with the scientific research that's going on?
The biblical account of creation and of the origins of the human being are beautiful stories that reflected a people's faith in God and their view of the universe at that time. It is not, their view of the universe at that time was not scientific. I mean, science in the sense that we know it today did not exist. Human intelligence had not evolved to the point, human civilization. So that, you know, the Bible stories have to be taken for what they are. The challenges to us today are to take them as they are and see what science says today and help enrich our faith in those described in those stories. But what science says to us today, there should be not any contrast between the two.
How does the Vatican view the teaching of evolution in a classroom? And how does it view science? As you know, does it view it as a dogma, as a belief system itself? How does the Vatican view that whole controversy?
I would say the Vatican, again, it's very difficult because there's no official policy on this. The Pope has recently issued, within the past 2 years, you know, saying that evolution is no longer a mere theory, you know, that it's an established scientific, statement about the way things are. I think the Vatican, the Catholic Church in general, wants to see taught in the schools the best science that is available. That it be the best science that is available and accept the challenges that that science makes to religious belief. The thing that I find difficult with those who do not want evolution talk is they talk about the evidence from astronomy and cosmology and all of this with respect to evolution is that we have no experimental evidence. Well, that's obvious. And it's absurd to use that as a challenge. We have observational evidence. I mean, astronomy and cosmology are not experiments. We don't have a laboratory. The universe is our laboratory. We have to be clever enough with mathematics and physics to interpret what we observe in the best way. I mean, we're looking at, you know, the evolution of the universe is an absolutely undeniable fact. The fact that the human being has come out of a new universe in evolution is an undeniable scientific reality. But I can't put it on a laboratory table. I can't experiment with it. I have to observe the universe and interpret it.
Why do you feel there is such anger about this from a whole bunch of different fronts? I mean, you've got the fundamentalists, and you've got the atheists, and you've got the Christians, and everybody is up in arms about this whole subject. Why is it so powerful?
Well, the power is in the fact that they want to use science. All of them want to use science for their own ends, their vested interest. I think whenever there's a vested interest, things are going to go haywire. Religious belief does not need the vested interest of certain views of science. Let science grow as it will, present its evidence and its observations, and then try and interpret your religious faith according to that. But to use your religious faith to deny or affirm certain scientific findings is absolutely out. Whether you're fundamentalist or liberal, and especially, I must say, the fundamentalist, whether it's Islamic fundamentalism or Christian fundamentalism, its incompatibility with science is precisely that. It will not allow science to enrichen faith. It has a vested interest in preserving a certain religious view, and that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. You, as a priest and a scientist, are a practitioner of two of the greatest endeavors the human mind has ever come up with. How do the two, for you, inspire each other? And what can you give to our viewers as some advice on how they might be able to make the two work for them?
I mean, I personally love them both, my scientific work and my religious faith, my practice as a priest, dealing with people as a priest. I love them both. That's a very personal thing. But I think a more public and common thing is the following, that we're human beings. All of us are human beings. Whether our endeavor professionally is science or doing ministry as a priest, we're human beings. We should let all of these parts of our life grow together in a very sincere and fruitful way.
What do you see personally as your greatest challenge over the next, hopefully, many, many years of your life?
I think to grow with the church and yet challenge the church. I mean, the Catholic Church today has to grow into the future. The thing I try to say to those that I think I can have some influence with is that if you can establish your moral and your doctrinal statements on good science, why do it on poor science? So the church has to grow to listen to good science, to establish what into the future, biogenetic engineering and all of these issues that are coming up, to establish a sound position. It has to listen to science, good science.
Here we sit on the brink of the next millennium, and we've got some huge challenges ahead of us, particularly in biology, genetic engineering, some really fundamental questions that we're going to have to answer. Scientifically, religiously, theologically. How does the human spirit deal with those challenges? How does religious faith help us to deal with the science and the technology that we've got coming right at us?
We have to deal with those challenges, and they are enormous challenges, very carefully, but very, I would say, openly. And Frankly, this millennium, what I call it, millennium fever. I mean, at the year 1000, they were facing, we were going off within 200 years to the Crusades. The world was changing halfway through the century. America was discovered. How do we accept that challenge? How do we integrate that into our civilization? But the immense sort of quality of these challenges is changing dramatically. We're facing challenges into the next millennium that are enormous for the human being. I mean, genetic engineering, just take that as an example. I mean, that's going to be an enormous challenge to our civilization. And unless the spirit of scientific investigation and religious faith can work together on this, we're doomed to failure. there has to be dialogue into the future on these issues.
I had a lot of comments this evening after the program about people saying, I don't understand how this person can have a religious faith and be a scientist. That the two just cannot possibly work together. That's kind of what you were talking about. I think that Carl Sagan was maybe trying to make the point in Contact. What did you call it? Scientism?
Scientism. As if science were everything, making an ism of it, like communism or, you know, that's it. The only real truth is if I can't observe it, find, you know, material evidence for it, it doesn't exist, scientism. As if all of the universe, all of human existence, all of religious faith has to be based upon what science can establish. That's scientism, and I think that's wrong. That's
one of the most marvelous lines in that movie, Contact, I think, was when someone asked Jodie Foster if she loved her father, and she said yes. And he said, "How do you know? Prove it." And she couldn't.
Right. That's it.
That's it.
That's
some
it.
Things can be proven, and some things cannot. And you
I
have
mean,
to
the
take
the experience
them on
of human existence, just living as a human being, live it. You know, don't always be rationalizing it, trying to, you know, put it into a test tube and all. Live it, and you'll find that there's more than science to human existence.
Well, thank you, Father Coyne, for joining us this evening.
Thanks.
It was great, and I certainly hope you'll come back and join us again.
Be a pleasure to do so. Thanks.
And nice. Thank you very much for watching us this evening on UCSD Guestbook. Thank you.